Jewish Latin Princess, Episode 7, Shimona Tsukernik, the Kabbalah Coach.
You're listening to Jewish Latin Princess Podcast by Ya'el. Every week, get your dose of inspiration from the world's most uniquely talented Jewish women. And from Ya'el herself. Seeking profound and practical ways to live a joyful, richer Jewish life? Welcome to Jewish Latin Princess Podcast. And now, Jewish lifestyle expert and bilingual blogger at JewishLatinPrincess.com, your host, Ya'el.
You're listening to Jewish Latin Princess, everyone. Welcome back. I'm your host, Ya'el Trush. Hope you're doing well. Do you think Judaism does not have what to offer you in terms of spirituality? Are you spiritually inclined but think spirituality can be achieved through other traditions? Or perhaps you're super practical and don't think Jewish spirituality or Judaism has much to offer you because you don't have time for that stuff? I think today's interview will be insightful no matter which of those camps you're holding on. Today I speak with Shimona Tsukernik, the Kabbalah Coach. We go through her journey to becoming a renowned motivational speaker, an expert in Kabbalah and Jewish mysticism, and the creator of The Method. What is The Method? Shimona will walk us through this program for self-mastery and transformation, which teaches us how to thrive in life. And we all want that, don't we? I hope. Let me tell you, this is not just inspiration and woo-woo kind of stuff. What she's teaching becomes super practical. It is indeed transformational. You'll love to hear the four areas of our lives we should focus on to achieve true change. We discuss the concept of bittul, nullification, how it's a major difference between New Age spirituality and Jewish spirituality. What is it exactly and how do we achieve it? And finally, you'll be surprised to hear the things she does to keep herself grounded, sane, connected to herself and to God in this hectic world. They're practical, timely, and super relevant for all of us, no matter where we are on our level of religious observance. And be sure to stay till the end of the interview because Shimona has a special offer for JLP listeners, which you won't want to miss. Enjoy the show. Shimona Tsukernik, the Kabbalah Coach. Welcome to Jewish Latin Princess.
Thank you, Ya'el. Wonderful to be with you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. So you are the Kabbalah Coach. You're a renowned motivational speaker, an expert in Kabbalah and Hasidic teachings. But I understand that you were a very spiritual person, as a young woman, mm-hmm. but you weren't necessarily searching for spirituality within Judaism, and you had a journey that led you to actually find whatever it was that you were looking for within Judaism. So take us a little bit through that process, that journey that you went through.
All right. Well, I'll share two things, I think, that were really life-changing for me. Mm-hmm. I remember years ago seeing this sticker. It wasn't a bumper sticker, but maybe a fridge magnet or something. It said, "Cosmic harmony is as Jewish as matzo ball soup." And, you know, I grew up thinking that the two were worlds apart. Somehow I always knew I was Jewish, I identified culturally, and I always believed in God. But I didn't think that I could really get to know my soul and my source, my creator, through Judaism. I was much more focused on Eastern spirituality. I had studied different forms of meditation and Tai Chi, etc. And I had three experiences that were very impactful in my life. The one was not so much spiritual but philosophical. I went to my mom sent my sisters and I to a program just to learn about our Judaism, and mm-hmm. it was during the winter in South Africa, kind of cold outside, and we were sitting on the Highveld grass, which is this, you know, yellow South African scene, and we were studying a book by the Khuzari, who is Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, wrote mm-hmm. it, or he's known now by the name of his book as well, and he speaks about how we know that God gave the Torah at Mount Sinai. Now, what I realized in looking at the book is that although I believed in God, I somehow kind of thought that the rabbis had made everything up, and wasn't that the story of Sinai was just that, a story.
A story.
And as we sat there studying, he gave such powerful philosophical arguments. He's a medieval philosopher. I realized that I wasn't the first one that had thought of it. Much greater minds and souls than mine had attended to this, and that it was part of our tradition. I actually also came to understand that Maimonides, the Rambam, looks at the first of the Ten Commandments, I am God, your God, as not an injunction to believe, but to know God. Because how can you say to someone, believe in me? If you don't believe in God, well, then saying God said you should believe in me is something that didn't make sense. Those were the kinds of things that we explored. I was 15, and I remember my sisters and I came home and told my mom that we had actually experienced something about our Jewish roots, and we wanted to keep Shabbat and kosher and get new clothes, etc. And she was shocked. You know, it was much more than she had bargained for. That was, you know, one step along the way. And the second was that I had a wonderful French teacher who was engaged to a Buddhist. His father was actually a Jewish guy, and I was very close to her. She guided me a lot. She opened me at the age of around 15, 16 to profound spiritual concepts. I'm still in touch with him today, actually. Wow. We connected through Facebook. His name is Mike Dickman, and she's Vera Mihailovic. And he's a Tibetan translator. Uh-huh. And at one point, I went to his home, he was going to do a tarot reading. It's not something I would do now, but, you know, I was 15 or 16, really exploring and searching. And one of the books that he had on his shelf had an image of the Kabbalistic Tree of Life with letters, the Hebrew letters in it. And I was just stunned. It was like, oh, cosmic harmony and matzo ball soup. You know,
that bumper sticker.
This Jewish thing might just have something for me. So that was the second thing. And then a little while later, I had a friend who introduced me to my teacher. His name is Rabbi Kesselman, lives in South Africa. And the first time I met him, we got into an argument. I was, a feminist and involved in the anti-apartheid struggle. Mm-hmm. And I felt that Judaism was sexist and that it was also bigoted against non-Jewish people.
Right.
And we got into this argument, and I stormed out. I remember storming out of his home. And later his wife told me that she said to him, you can't speak that way. You have to package your message differently. She's never coming back. Anyway, I did come back. I actually left the house, and I was sitting outside in the car, and I remember feeling that just as one can turn a sock inside out, it was as if he had turned my mind inside out. Something got ruffled over there, and I went back and back and back, and 31 years later, our children got married.
Wow, what a story.
Yeah, that was like, you know, part of my journey. He was, I guess, the most fundamental influence from that point on in my spiritual development, really teaching me what the differences were between contemporary New Age thinking and more global spirituality and the specific path of my soul, the Jewish path, and within that, the mystical path. So that's kind of how I got hooked.
Wow. And now you've gotten to the point where you've even developed your own program. Called it The Method, which is a user-friendly program for self-mastery and transformation, and you teach people how to thrive in life using these tools of Kabbalah that you've learned over the years. So tell us about The Method. What do we learn there? What is it doing for us?
Well, you know, I was my own first client. I wanted not just to survive. I really wanted to thrive. And I have seen in my work, now I'm working with clients for 26 years, it kind of grew organically, that to heal, really heal, one has to have healed oneself. The degree to which I can go into my own being and get honest and aligned with God is the degree to which I can help other people do that. And God threw me some really intense curveballs that I had to navigate. Rabbi Kesselman helped me a lot, and study and prayer helped me Wesley. So when I came to the States, I worked, my degree was in fine arts. But I came here as an immigrant. I couldn't afford a studio, and I was supplementing my income with teaching. And at that time, I had taken on a lot of mentorship roles. I believe that mentorship is vital to making progress in life, not apprenticeship, which is also wonderful. I had worked as an apprentice to an etcher when I was in art school, which taught me almost more than I did at school. Mm-hmm. I had had Rabbi Kesselman as my mentor, and I worked as, not for pay, it was just working with my students, mentoring them. In Hebrew, the word is mashpia,
right,
to give influence. And with time, there were just so many young women who were turning to me. I didn't have time, and I began to charge. And once I charged, you know, you put a price tag on something, there's an exchange. Not that I hadn't been giving from the depths of my being to those young women, but I felt a different kind of accountability. Mm-hmm. And so I would send my clients notes. And with time, I saw that although the stories were different, the feelings, the currents, the challenges were very similar. And I had a client who at one point said to me, by this time I had clients of across the spectrum of age and religious affiliation. Mm-hmm. And this girl said to me, I kind of think I'm done, but I love you and I want to stay connected. Can we be friends? And, you know, we learn about our father, Abraham. He said, say little, do much. Right. And I said to her, the only people I really get to speak to on a regular basis are my mother and sisters, and it's just not going to happen as much as I enjoy our time together. And she said, well, maybe you can teach me to do what you do. That's an interesting question. Let me see what I can put together. And I went to these notes and I looked through and I thought, wow, I can really do this. And I put together a program and I put out word. I said to people, you know, I'm thinking of doing this program. I had the rough outline. Mm-hmm. You would take this program, and when you finish it, there'd also be the option to sign on to become a certified coach. I would train you to be a coach. And I had 79 people respond within the first hour or so.
It was just,
and I felt like, oh wow, that was just too much. You know, I hadn't bargained for that. Mm-hmm. So I took 24 people, I think, and divided them into groups, and we did these trial runs. I did a trial run that went for about 3 months. And you want to know an interesting thing? At that time, there was a TV crew in my house. It was a program on moms in America. So I was the token Jewish mom.
Oh.
And concurrently with that, so it's like, you know, reality TV in my home there was a time that it was scheduled for during this trial run. And at the same time, I got an email from a guy, I'm doing my PhD on religion and psychology, can I come meet with you? And because I had once done it, you know, a friend has a friend, this guy happened to find me on the internet. I often get these emails, and it's always just an hour, but it's never just an hour.
Right, right.
I didn't want to say no, but I didn't want to say yes, so I said nothing. And then he emailed me again, and he said, listen, I'm going to be in town from Atlanta tomorrow. Can I meet with you? And I said, okay, you know, come in, but just know that there'll be a TV crew here. I was like, okay, fine. They left for the time that I was with him, just to allow for privacy. And it turns out the reason I said come is because I thought to myself, well, the guy's probably 28, 29, doing his PhD, nice Jewish boy. Right. Like maybe I know a girl for him.
Oh, yeah, it's funny.
And the guy walks in, gray hair, wedding ring. He had been one of the founders of the first online bank, First Security National Bank. Anyway, we really hit it off, and he had worked on his PhD at that point for 3 years. He switched his entire focus, took the trial run, took the method for a year, and then published his PhD on my program because he felt that it was A, authentic, and B, life-changing. He said to me, there's a lot of inspiration out there, but very little transformation. And with his guidance, I built the program. You know, it was like I was helping him with his PhD, and he was helping me with my business. I learned more than I could have in, with an MBA, just working, you know, those 2 years. And so what I landed up creating was a program that is step-by-step giving people the tools that they need for transformation. We all quote that very famous line from Einstein that you can't solve a problem at the level it was created.
Right.
And what Kabbalah does, and Hasidut, Torah in general, is give people a perspective on life that is completely inside out. The principles by which we work are not necessarily the same. There's many points of differences, some that are very similar. I've had Gestalt therapists, DBT therapists, many others take the program from walks of life, and they find it to be life-changing for themselves and for their work. So we begin in semester one, which is called Soul Map, just looking at the map of the soul. How are we built? What's the landscape of our soul and of reality so that we can begin to align ourselves with it? And that's one of the meanings of the word Kabbalah. Is one is from the root word lekabel, to receive, because it is a received oral tradition, but the other is from the word lahakbil, which is to make parallel, to align things. So we teach, we study how to align ourselves with the truth of our identity. And then we move on. There's Soul Quest, which is about us pursuing our goals, what stops us, blocks us, and how can we get there. And then there's Soul to Soul, which is a relationship semester, really focusing on bringing all we've learned, the map, and personal growth to bear on relationships. And then there is Soul Mission. Soul Mission is about, that's the roadmap kind of. It's a very specific part of the program that shows people how to take the principles and apply them in great detail. It's like you get an exercise. Couple of days to do, so that eventually by the end of that you can manifest in the world something that you have been dreaming of doing and bring to bear the lights of your own soul in the world. So I offer it semester by semester, and you, so if people don't want to join for a whole semester's commitment, they can just buy the individual modules. There's 22 modules have those 4 semesters. Yeah.
And so by the end of the course, we've learned to bring it all to application, to the practical.
Right. And, you know, when I look at the tree and analyze it, people, I point out that there are really 4 intelligences that we have.
Oh, tell us.
The top of the tree is Keter, the crown.
Right.
So that is SQ, what I call SQ, spiritual intelligence. And then you have the 3 intellectual modalities. The acronym for that is Chabad. I call that IQ. That's just normative intellectual intelligence. And then you have the emotional attributes, which is EQ. And then finally, the behavioral intelligence, BQ. And I knew from working with people for years that if you don't hit on all of those pieces, then change eludes us. We need the spiritual piece. We work on faith, believing in God, and believing that God believes in us. And to enhance that, I have meditations. The meditations can be purchased separately on the site, but when you do the method, it, you know, we do different ones at specific times in the course. So there's SQ, and then IQ is the learning. You get slideshows and audios. EQ is a coaching component, and it is coupled with what I call BQ, behavioral intelligence. The behavioral intelligence are steps. So with every module, there are a number of suggested steps and things to try out, which vary. they extremely varied. Some of the exercises are writing exercises. Some of them are as basic as using your left hand. Others got to do with visuals, etc. As people try the steps, they then want to get coached on them. And so I, when I first did the method, had the most incredible group. I had people who had taken the trial run and they went on to be the original method members. And many of them gave me permission to post my coaching of them online, of course, anonymously.
Right.
And so that's the EQ. Even if you don't join the program, when you buy the course, you listen to archives of the coaching. If you do the live program with me, then you get coached on weekly webinars together with me. And I think that, you know, whether someone takes the method or not, to think about your life in this way is very useful. SQ, IQ, EQ, BQ. It's like four quadrants. What am I doing to contain my being, my soul, guide and direct it? If we don't have action, we lose the spiritual peace.
Right, right.
There's an article that I wrote that speaks about the Kabbalah of Pilates. And when you look at the body, the hips are compared to faith.
Mm-hmm.
And you might say, well, surely faith is above the head, you know, the skull, the fontanelle. Yes, that is true, but they are also the hips, because the hips are the foundation for the whole body. But you can have a skeleton. If you don't have a strong pelvic core, your skeleton's going to flop around. And the core is action, halakha,
right,
Torah law. So in my program, although I'm not specifically teaching laws or telling people how to live their daily life, these are suggestions. The steps are more behavioral things, exercises that you can do, things you can try out, whether it's a conversational model, stuff like that,
right,
that is going to help someone to then integrate the emotional, intellectual, and spiritual component.
Right. I love this approach to transformation, you know, because it's so comprehensive. And I think it's something listeners have to bear in mind. If you're trying to do any sort of inner work, you have to really take into account these four areas. I think that's just absolutely
right. Wonderful. And you know, Gail, it's not McDonald's, you know, there's no drive-by.
It's work.
Yeah, and Michael, the guy who did his PhD on the program, said to me, there's a lot of inspiration out there, but very little transformation.
Right.
The fact that it was authentically coming from a source that wasn't just taking some kind of New Age concept and repackaging it as Kabbalah,
right,
but that was authentically rooted in a tradition, and B, that it was not just inspirational but transformational, really got him interested in the program. And that's something that all of us need to know. Inspiration is quick but fleeting.
Right.
If you want to really bring it down, it takes a lot of work.
Shimona, you mentioned already New Age a couple of times, and you yourself had been involved in the study of Eastern religions and all sorts of different things. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we notice that we live in a world where people actually have become increasingly spiritual, but we also see that spirituality has become about the I, the self, you know, how I feel. And to a certain extent, I find it almost self-indulging at times. And at the opposite side of the spectrum lie the teachings of Judaism and Hasidicism, in which real spirituality is only achieved through letting go of that I, through what we call bittul. So how do we make that bridge? How do we bridge that wide gap between the self and bittul? I know when I talk about bittul, people sometimes go a little bit like blurry-eyed, like I just said Chinese. Like, it's such a hard concept for people to grasp. Like, help us grasp this concept of bittul, because it's so fundamental.
Okay, so there, I want to set it up by sharing a principle.
Okay.
You will never change unless what you stand to gain is worth more to you than what you do by your current behavior.
Ooh.
And I find that it's very difficult to let go of the ego, because the sense is that when I do, I'll have nothing. So bittul, which means nullification, is connected to the word for immersion.
Right.
It's like think of something being submerged, tefillah, submerging one's body in a pool of water.
Right.
It's still there, but it's covered by the water. What bittul is about is surrendering the ego in order to touch the truer self. That's the key. If you don't have a sense that inside of my ego is something much deeper and truer and more absolute, my unwoundable self, or what we call the sticky self in the method, if you don't have a sense that that's what is available to you afterwards, you can't let go of the ego. We always come back to the ego, or to soothing our need to change through our various addictions or compensatory behaviors, because we haven't cultivated enough of a sense of what's on the other side of that. And the analogy I like to give is of a seed. There's actually a course on this. It's called Do Think, and we look at the evolution, the life cycle of a seed in terms of personal growth. So you have the seed, which is our potential, but it's kind of encased in a shell, which we can think of as the ego. It's only through the deconstruction, through the decay of that seed, that the sprout can begin to emerge.
Right.
We have to have the courage to let go of the safe space in order to enter something that is infinitely beyond what we know through, you know, what we know through the ego. So my personal sense, if listeners would like, you go to my site, thekabbalahcoach.com or shimona.org. Under free offerings in the shop, there's something called isms. Those are the method isms that they can download for free. One of the isms is believe that God believes in you. Mm-hmm. Now, when I started speaking with people, you know, many of the people that come to see me are in a lot of pain. Another one of the isms is pain is inevitable, suffering is a choice. There's a big difference between pain and suffering.
Right.
But certainly in pain, and most of them suffering. And would say to me, I don't believe in God anymore. And what I understood is that they definitely did believe in God, but they didn't believe that God believed in them.
Mm-hmm.
The key to bittul, to surrender, is as follows. First, you have to believe in God. Second, and every one of us does, we may not be in touch with it, but if we scratch the surface, we find that there is that faith. It's our birthright. Then comes the downward face of faith, is believing that God believes in us, really working on understanding divine providence, and that even though things don't go our way, it is for our good. It is all for our best, and that God loves each one of us as an only child, as if there was no other human being created on this earth, just us. The entire universe is for us. So that's another meditation. Once we believe in God and believe that God believes in us, then we are able to trust. Now, this is the very bottom of the tree. The two faces of faith are the top of the tree. Think of the spine. So there's the skull, and then coming all the way down at the base of the spine, the sacrum and the reproductive organs, the upward face is trust. You can let go. You can surrender.
Mm-hmm.
Let's trust. There's faith is the upward face, and believing God believes in you
mm-hmm.
gives you a sense of trust. When you have the trust, you can then surrender. Then you can let go of the ego. It hurts a lot, but you feel safe. Remember those games where two people stand and another person is stiff in the center, and then you push
yes,
that.
Yes, you do it like in school retreats, leadership retreats, and all that
right.
stuff.
when you know the people and you trust the people, then you're able to do it.
Right.
So there's that sense of being able to surrender because you have the trust. And once you surrender, you are able to manifest. That's the downward face of the bottom sphere called Malchut. So the upward face is surrender. And once you've done that, the most remarkable thing happens, which is that we begin to be able to manifest our full potential. That's like the seed sprouting. That seed has to trust in the ground that there is what Kabbalah calls Koach HaTzomeach Sheva Adama, the power to cause things to grow in the earth. It's a remarkable power. It's not the seed, but it's almost more powerful than the seed, and then it acts upon the seed. The seed trusts that and surrenders, and then the sprout emerges. So although that may sound abstract, I think that it's actually quite practical because it's a step-by-step faith, trust, surrender, yes, and manifestation.
Yes, definitely. I love it. I love it. Let's shift it a little bit to you because we want to hear about you. You have a fast-paced life like the rest of us. I'm curious, tell us, what habits do you practice, perhaps daily or regularly, which help keep you grounded, sane, connected to your true self and to God in this crazy, hectic world that we live in?
Look, firstly, I know that people say you can have it all. That may be true, but you can't have it all at the same time.
I always say that, and I truly believe it. You can't have it all at the same time, but you can have it all.
Right. So I feel that for me, there had to be a very big focus. Like, you know, Sheryl Sandberg wrote Lean In. I haven't read it, but
yes,
you can have anything you want. Well, I don't see that there isn't a price to pay for that. And in my life, I made a decision. I could have made my business much bigger than it is. Mm-hmm. But first priority I see is to my children,
right,
to my husband and my children as a wife and mother. And, you know, I think we've kind of outsourced parenting. It's a form of socialism that has embedded itself in the culture where kids are educated in daycare and in school. I cherish the time with my children, and now I have two grandchildren, thank God. They stayed with us for the holiday of Passover, and I just saw the power of the extended family unit being in one place and the socializing of children that happened. So I did let go of wanting to have everything, certainly at one time, and put priorities on that. Like anyone in my program knows, I took an electronic fast for almost 2 weeks. I just wasn't on the computer, wasn't on my phone. Mm-hmm. I find that in and of itself is very powerful. Don't check your emails first thing in the morning. Don't get on your phone. I try when I go to sleep to make a decision of one thing that is going to move my business forward tomorrow, and of course one thing that needs to be done in my personal life the next day. And sometimes the personal thing is going to be scheduled later in the day, but certainly my business, I don't want to get on emails until I have done that one thing. And knowing that what feels like, you see, we're so trained to think of all the stuff that life takes as being meaningless. But those are the important and non-urgent things, as Stephen Covey says. So
yes,
prayer and exercise. But I think it's more a headspace of saying, what are my priorities in general and what is my specific task for tomorrow that's going to take me closer to that goal? And really being disciplined around electronic media.
I was going to say, it takes a lot of discipline on your part, on everybody's part.
Yeah, I just, you know, yesterday posted something about an addiction program I'm thinking of restarting on the internet. And someone said I would be interested if it included phone addiction. And, you know, I know that some people might think that's strange, but over 50% of teens think they might be addicted to their phones. And the Times of London just published an article recently on the growing epidemic of loneliness because we're so attached to social media.
We are.
And I don't get confused with the fact that my thousands of friends on Facebook are not the ones that I spend time with. If I can just say really quickly, before we end, there's a really interesting chapter in Jonah Lehrer's book, L-E-H-R-E-R. It's called Imagine, How Creativity Works. He was a journalist for the Wall Street Journal and has published in other places. And he in one of the chapters, he's talking about why such incredible creativity came out of the village, Greenwich Village.
Right.
And because you didn't, it's not the suburbs where people are far apart, and it's not even midtown and uptown where you've got these blocks that don't intersect. In the village, there's tiny little streets that are intersecting all the time. And one of the things he posits is that people were meeting others from all walks of life.
Right.
Nothing to compensate. You know, if you have to go to the post office or you're standing in line, speak to the people there.
Right. Right.
I used to chat with people on airplanes. And, you know, now that you've got Wi-Fi on planes, even that disappeared. And I think that it's conversation is an art we have to revive.
Right, right, right. Yeah, truly very timely and so smart. I often try to just leave my phone in the car when I'm going to a grocery store, even just so that I could stand in line and just look at my surroundings and maybe talk to somebody next to me.
Or supporting your local vendors.
Right.
I do that rather than order on Amazon because I want to keep them in business and I want to interact with my community. Of course, there's much more meaningful interaction, but even those little things
add up. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. All right. Shimona, let's do some JLP fill in the blanks. This is where I give you a sentence and you fill it out with whatever whatever first thing comes to mind. No right or wrong answers. It's just fun. All right. Okay. I am Shimona Sukernik and I feel most spiritual when...
I'm talking to God or playing with my kids.
Oh, I love that. All right. My favorite mitzvah or one that I feel most connected to is?
Learning Torah, 100%. And my most difficult one, can I add that?
Ooh, and that's, I always say like that one mitzvah that is the hardest one for us. It's the one that we really are meant to be working on, right?
Yeah, mine is prayer, and that's why I've worked so hard.
Mine is also prayer. Oy. Absolutely. Okay, we need to talk offline about this.
I've come to love it.
All right, well, I need to talk to you about that because I want to come to love it. All right. My fondest, sweetest Jewish memory is?
I think my most touching one is of being a little girl and standing at my mom's thighs when she would light candles. The day that I was high enough to see her reflection in the mirror on the in the glass on the sideboard when the candles were reflected there. I knew I was growing up and I would one day light my own candles.
Wow, that's beautiful, very powerful. All right, when I give tzedakah, I like to give to?
Oh my, too many places. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's absolutely
fine. I like to
fine.
Give to, I would say the people I'm most giving to are those who need the method who can't afford.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
Very
beautiful. And finally, I am Shimona Tsukernik, and today I am most grateful for?
This moment.
Oh.
Yeah.
I love
later
that.
Later it will be different, but
right
now, fully, right. Fully grateful with a warm heart for the chance to speak with you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And being present, being in the moment is so important and so powerful. Thank you, Shimona, so much. Everyone, you can find Shimona on her website, thekabbalahcoach.com, for tremendous resources, and you'll get access to the method there and her blog.
Yeah.
Yes.
Can I just mention
Yes.
The freebie that we're giving away for you.
Tell us the freebie.
So we created a coupon code. It's JLP. Mm-hmm. It is to use on the site to buy a program called Bottoming Out and the Burning Bush.
Ooh, that sounds awesome.
Eight principles for breaking through. It's about addiction, and it uses the burning bush, the biblical account of Moses at the bush, to speak about handling addiction, which could be anything from being on the phone too much to food to anything else.
Wow, I love that. So everyone, you get the coupon code JLP at checkout on thekabbalahcoach.com, correct?
Correct.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Thank you again, Shimona. This was really beautiful, really wonderful. We can't wait to hear more from you and see what else you contribute to the world. You really are a gift to all of us, and I really appreciate
you. Thank you, Gael. It was so wonderful to share time with you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to Jewish Latin Princess Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe on iTunes, leave a rating, and share the podcast with the Jewish women you love. To access today's show notes, ask Yael a question, or suggest a uniquely talented Jewish woman to be featured on the show, visit JewishLatinPrincess.com.